The following is a paid advertisement. The opinions, viewpoints, and promises made during the following program are not those of KHOW, its staff, management, or parent company, iHeartMedia Incorporated.
This show is a legal advertisement, and it is intended to provide general information only. It is not intended to provide specific legal advice, nor does it create an attorney-client relationship. You should not rely on general legal information instead of specific legal advice regarding your specific circumstances. Follow-up contact does not create an attorney-client relationship and does not constitute legal advice.
Welcome to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. I'm Brad Pollock, Bob Leonard in studio today with me. Gary Bell's out of town. We're here to answer your legal questions, talk to you about whatever might be going on in your legal life. If you have any legal issues you need to talk about, advice you need, any information you need, call us. We'll do our best to answer it here online. If we can't answer it or if it takes more detail, we'll take your name and number and research it and get back to you. I'm going to discuss it with you over the week. We do this as a service. We've done it for well over 10 years, every single Saturday morning at 7 o'clock, based on phone calls of what people have in mind and what questions they have. You can call us at 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. Or if you're in Steamboat, you can call us at 970-457-1009. We're personal injury lawyers in our regular legal life, everyday personal injury lawyers, but we come in here, try and answer any question, because we realize sometimes people just have questions over things like what's going on in their marital life, or in their trust life, or in their wills, or their divorces, or their family law cases, or their traffic cases. And we try and get you an answer so you have a chance to know what's happening, you understand what's happening in your life and what can go on. Bob, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Brad. How are you this morning?
Doing great. Bob, we talk about insurance, and we're always talking about people getting as much insurance as they can with respect to liability insurance and with respect to UIM insurance and MedPay insurance. Something we don't talk about very often is homeowners insurance, Bob. Homeowners insurance can cover a lot more than we think, can't it?
It sure can, Brad. In fact, the other day I was looking online, and one of these online real estate sites, noticed my house had gone up almost $100,000 last year, and realized I didn't have enough insurance. So I called my carrier. I mean, you need to protect yourself with rising rates and values of houses, and you know, not only covers your house, but covers your stuff in your house. One thing you need to be concerned about, though, there are things that may not be covered, excluded in your house, and you have to have special riders.
And it's an important thing when you sit down and you talk to somebody about what's happening with your homeowner's insurance. You want to talk to them about what exactly is there that covers your insurance, and what insurance is there, how much is there, is it going to cover the items that have been burned or damaged or destroyed, is it going to cover me in the event of a flood, if it's a flood from rain, or if it's a flood from a pipe bursting, what's it from? And you want to make sure you have coverage in the different events which might occur and that apply to you. You want to find out if you're in a flood zone and what might be going on with that. But right now we're going to go to the phones. We're going to talk to, is it Jess? Jess, you have a question concerning a lien issue?
Yes. I was putting liens on some properties I'd done work on. Then I found out that it has to be a permanent improvement, and what I do isn't. Just how big of a legal problem could that be?
Okay, give me a little bit more detail. You say it has to be a permanent improvement, and you've been putting liens on property. What basically are you putting the liens on the property for? How are you doing, and how are you filing these liens or recording them?
People who back out of contracts without adhering to the details of how they have to go about doing that, I'd put a lien on the property for the value of the contract.
Is it a lien for improvement to the property?
No, maintenance on the lawn.
All right. So you're leaning on the fact that you've gone in and done some maintenance work and for lawn maintenance, that type of thing.
Yes.
Okay. And when you say you're doing a lien, are you filing it in the form of a mechanics lien, or what are you doing?
Yes.
You don't have a contract that allows you to do any kind of maintenance or any kind of lien, right?
There's nothing on the contract that would specifically allow me to.
Okay. You're not... able to file such a lien and record such a lien. On those types of situations, what you're doing is you're clouding title, and you're doing it based on the failure for the on, like you said, not a permanent improvement or not an upgrade to the property. Although I want to be careful with what people do when they do lawn maintenance, because they do upgrade the property substantially with respect to the appearance. When you're talking about your lawn maintenance, are you talking, though, about where you're planting shrubs and trees?
No.
Or is it mowing lawn?
Pretty much just mowing and cleanups and stuff like that.
Yeah. For that, there's probably not a mechanics lien available, and you probably can't carry out that lien. So if you've done these liens, first of all, when you did them, did you follow the mechanics lien type law of giving a 10 days notice before you did it?
No, I didn't.
Okay, because even in a mechanics lien, you have a 10-day notice of intent to lien that you have to give to let somebody know you're about to lien the property. On these properties, you're probably going to want to release these liens. Now, how long have you been doing this? How long have you been doing it, Jess?
For a while.
Over years?
Yeah.
Okay, and about how many would you say you filed or you recorded?
10 or so.
Okay. Have you had anybody come back at you and make demand to release the lien?
No, I had some payments made and released them. And then when I found out that I wasn't really entitled to, I released all of them.
So you've done a release on all of them now?
Yes.
Oh, you've got no legal worry then. You're not going to have a problem. The fact that you clouded title for a brief period of time and then went back in and released them is, you're fine. I don't think you have to worry about it. Bob, what do you think?
I'd have to agree with you, Brad. The title would be clouded, and I think that once the release, the title's probably clear once again.
So you're in safe shape. Now, let me ask you, do you have a mechanism or anything in your contract? Do you do a lawn contract when you're mowing lawns for people?
Yes.
And in your contract, do you have collection ability? Do you put in a collection paragraph?
Yes, but there's nothing, about liens, though. It's about collections and attorney fees, that kind of stuff.
And have you gone to court on any of that to get those taken care of?
Not any of them I put the liens on, but some contracts I had.
Okay, because you understand that once you get the judgment, you of course can then record a lien against the property. You can file your lien and get a transcript of judgment, file your lien, which would attach to any property that's owned or any assets they have.
Okay. One more quick question. The ones I collected on, could that come back to bite me?
No. If you collected on those, got your money, and resolve the issue, you're not going to have to worry about those coming back to get you. I presume when you collect it on, you release those liens also, correct?
Yes, after God check, release them.
Right. Now, I'd have to look into it, and I'm happy to look into it as we're coming up on the summer season, if you want to leave your name and number, to see if you can put that in your contract, which would allow you to put a lien on the property. You want me to check into that for you?
Oh, no, thanks. I just won't... file any more liens, just lawsuits.
All right. Well, let it go that way. Make sure you're a good friend of the small claims court, and that's where you're going to have most of your claims. And get yourself collected that way, all right?
Okay, well, thank you.
Okay, Jess, thank you for calling the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You can reach us at 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. We do have some lines open, and you're welcome to give us a call. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Brad Pollock, Bob Leonard in studio today to answer your questions. We have calls, so we're going to go straight to the phones. John, you have a question about business-to-business invoicing.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking the call. I've got a small business, a mechanical design business.
Okay.
It's a registered Colorado LLC.
Okay.
And I'm just curious about any language I might want to include on invoicing to further stipulate limits of liability for any design work.
Okay, so do you already have your invoices in place?
Yeah, and I'm just trying to tune them up, to be honest with you. And curious if I should put any language on there about, you know, liability of use of my in design products.
Well, you know, it would be a great idea. It's not a bad idea at all. But the question is normally you invoice after the fact. And when you're having people use your design products, aren't they contracting with you in advance and having you design the product your design?
Yeah, and that's the other question. I've just resurrected this business model. So I only have a couple of customers in the works right now that I'm doing things for. And so not any big deal at this point, but I do need to construct probably some upfront contracts, and I was going to ask about that as well.
That's where your liability waivers and all your information should be, is in the beginning contract. Now,
okay.
Normally, and let me ask you the structure of your business. Normally, are you out there doing a thing where you kind of take your bid and you give a bid to the customer as far as how much you're willing to do the work for?
Generally, what happens is it's sort of a close community for guys like to do this, and sort of it's typically more like, hey, man, you can do this for us, and we know it. Just we want you to do it. Go do it, type of thing.
Okay.
So it's not like a large scale, you know, request for quote and all that kind of stuff. Typically, not.
Do you settle on how much you're going to charge before you go do it?
We usually do it on a per hour basis. Sort of an as we go is how I try to do it.
Okay.
Because it could be very fluid, you know, the requirements and the needs change often. And I mean, you know, if it was going to be a large job, $100,000 job or something, then I definitely would construct a, you know, a more firm upfront setup, I think. But typically it's, you know, maybe 100 hours of something at $50 an hour, or, you know, something like that.
Right, and it's a quick design that you're doing. It, like you said, it takes a couple hours. It's going to be a couple $100, and you send them a bill, and that's it.
Exactly. Typically, that's what I'm shooting for. I'm kind of semi-retired, and that's actually my goal, is not to get into large, protracted situations. I'm trying to avoid that.
Are you marketing yourself on the internet at all?
Yes.
Okay. I would put the waiver, Bob, you can explain it. You can tell me if you think I'm wrong, but I would put the waiver on the internet publications you do. I'd put a small waiver there, waiver language, and then if you're doing it without a quote, without giving any kind of advance contract as far as what you're going to charge, I would definitely have it on the invoice. Normally, you've given them the design before you're billing them, correct?
Yes, and oftentimes it may be a sort of as we go. Like I might try to bill maybe every couple of weeks or something like that, so it doesn't pile up, you know. So,
right,
that sort of thing. Because, well, like I said before, there can be sometimes even the small ones can be a bit protracted. You know, gee, we'd really love to have this and that and things like that as you go. You know,
you just provide the design, but not the construct. You don't build the.
Exactly. I don't build. I purposely stayed out of that too. I've done all that before.
And you don't inspect. You don't inspect once it's built.
I'm sorry.
Do you inspect it after it's built, or do you say here's the design?
No. I may never see it actually.
Okay. Yeah, I would make sure I have the first communication to the customer. I'd make sure I have my waiver or my protection language in the contract or in the document I'm sending him. Then I would repeat it in the invoices. Absolutely. Both.
Okay, and the language I was thinking is something like, my company is not responsible for final implementation or outcomes of said product's design information or something like that.
And I think that's an excellent move right there to put that in there. And, you know, you're running it through your company name. Everything always goes through your company name, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, then I'd say my company, as in, say, the company's name, ABC Company, is not responsible for. All right?
Right.
And you know, I'd make sure that they understand your job ends with the design, period.
Okay, perfect. Now, real quick, back to the internet. Would I ever have to prove, and how could I, that they actually read and acknowledged anything that was on the website?
Normally, the way I try and talk to companies about doing something like that is, at the beginning, I ask them, I'd say, ask the person who's getting your services, how'd you find out about me?
Mm-hmm.
And if they have the internet and you have that disclaimer on the internet, I think you've got yourself a situation where they've looked at the internet and they understand what you're about.
I realize all of this is just a matter of at least having some legs to stand on in case something comes up. Nothing's foolproof, of course, but...
That's exactly right.
Well, I think they're responsible for the final, construction of whatever you're building.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think I would make sure that's in the contract, that they understand, or you're invoicing when you're sending it, the first documents that are going to them is they're responsible for the construct, mm-hmm. whatever happens. You've given a design, and it's up to them now to make sure they properly follow the design and they're responsible for any construction.
Okay, perfect. And actually, maybe I could have a communication early on that says, please go to website and review conditions
that. Are there any state agencies that actually go out and inspect after it's built?
No, but sometimes I do equipment that could go on an assembly line somewhere, which could be other, people utilizing the equipment. You could have an OSHA involvement or something if there's an accident, things like that.
I'd make sure they understand they have to comply with all requirements of any governmental agencies or regulatory agencies. And yes, I think you're exactly right. It's something you might want to be putting in your invoices, saying for more detail, they should look at, they should read your website. I think that's very important.
Perfect. Now, last thing, I'm a state-registered Colorado LLC. Is there anything in addition for further protection? Is there any conditions about the type of LLC or anything I should be aware of?
Well, you want to make sure they understand you're an LLC at all times. So hopefully you're putting that on all your paperwork. Is everything in your title?
Yes.
And you also need to conform to all the rules governing having a corporation sign as the president. Not individual. Make sure that they understand that you have a corporation and that you're representing the corporation, but not being an individual person.
Okay, correct. And by having the Colorado Registry LLC, that is the case. Just make sure I convey that to the customer.
Right. Now, I think we're going to, I want to have somebody call you during the week to discuss with you about keeping your records and keeping your books and keeping your minutes and your, are you giving yourself a corporate status of an LLC instead of a partnership status?
Well, the company is registered LLC, and the title of the company is LLC, and so I don't know beyond that. I haven't done anything other than register it and call it that, through the state.
Let me get your name and number and have one of our attorneys call you and talk to you about the necessary steps to make sure you're doing all the behind-the-scenes work you need to make sure you retain that LLC status, all right?
Yeah, beautiful. I'm very happy to do that. I'll take the next step to make sure I'm covered best I can be at this level anyway. Okay.
I'm going to put you on hold, have Kevin get your number, and then we'll get back to you.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Okay, John, thanks for calling the Bell and Paul Kliegel Show. We're going to stay right with the phones. We're going to go to Martin. Martin, we're probably going to have to go to break in the middle of your discussions, but we're ready to talk to you, buddy. What's going on?
Oh, I just want to comment about what can be entered into the court and in the context of out-of-court settlements and how much can be entered in or by counsel or the insurance representative.
Well, Bob, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I believe it's anything that the attorneys want to put in to the extent of confidentiality. I've had settlements where we'll stand up, especially if it's done on the courthouse steps, and say, Judge, we've reached a settlement, and I want to read this settlement into the record, and I want to make sure counsel agrees to it, and counsel says they agree to it, and everybody else does. And then I've had settlements where they say they want it completely confidential. They don't want anything said about it at all, except for the fact there's been a settlement.
Well, What about observations made by the insurance counsel or representative, adjuster, or whatever, prior to a settlement talk? For example, if an injured party is standing outside an office, jumping rope, and in front of the insurance adjuster and the counsel, and even though they're there for out-of-court settlement talk, is that still privileged? I know that's a kind of extreme example.
Is what's privileged? What do you mean privileged?
Well, in the context of out-of-court settlement talk, in other words, can that be repeated in a court setting?
No, I believe under the rules, anything that occurs or is discussed in mediation or in settlement or any type of settlement discussions is absolutely confidential. It can't be brought up to the court. It can't be brought up to a jury.
At what point does it start, though? At the minute those people arrive from the meeting?
You asked one of the best questions right there, and I believe it does. I believe it starts the minute you start the mediation. So if
they drive up to the curb, is that when it starts?
No. I think it starts when they walk into the office.
Bob? Into the office.
Well, I agree with that. You know, when the mediator actually tells you that anything said in the mediation or settlement conference is not admissible, he tells you can't testify, I think it's all protected.
Yeah, you're never going to get the mediator to testify. But, and you know, let's be logical about it, though. If the adjuster is sitting there in the middle of the conference and sees the client doing cartwheels down the hallway, and it's going to affect what the adjuster is willing to do in settlement. Now,
can that be entered into a court setting?
I don't think it can be entered into a court setting. I don't think you're going to be able to go into court and say this is what happened at mediation at all, in any way, shape, or form.
In other words, the bar is them from doing that.
That's right. But you can darn well be sure the adjuster is not going to work on the settlement or give you more money on the settlement. Now, the reverse side is, if the settlement's already done, if you've got it signed up, guess what? The adjuster can't undo it.
Well, thanks, guys.
Okay, Marty. Have a good one, buddy.
Take care, Bob.
Take care. Thanks for calling the Bell and Polk Legal Show. We're going to come right back. We do have some lines open, but next up is Bob and Littleton to talk about a mechanics lien question. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Brad Pollock, Bob Leonard in studio today. We're going to talk to Karen over at Caitlin's right now. Karen, how you doing?
Actually, you get me. Sorry.
Oh, Eric. Okay. What are you guys doing? Trying to help confuse me or what's
right,
up, buddy?
Yeah, we're trying to throw you for a loop. Make sure you're on your toes.
Cooking. Was that it?
Oh, yeah, exactly. We got one last week of specials. We got our breakfast special, which is our Greek omelet. We're going to serve it with feta cheese, spinach, tomato, a side of hash browns. You get toast tortilla or pancakes on the side. I highly, highly suggest the pancakes. And our lunch special is going to be a blue cheeseburger. It's a 6-ounce Angus patty. We're going to cook it to a temperature of your choice. And we're going to top that off with blue cheese. And you can get your waffle fries or your chips with that on the side. And that'll be our lunch special. And don't forget, every Monday and Friday from 11 to 2. Don't forget, every Friday from 11 to 2. It's all you can eat. Taco burrito buffet. It's only $7.99. That actually includes a drink and the price. So if that's not enough to get you down, I don't know what is. Come on down.
Well, I know something that can get me down there, Eric. It's going to be 80 degrees today. That just talks about the patio being open, doesn't it?
Well, the umbrellas will be up, and you can bring your dog, I think, Karen, right?
Yes.
You can bring your dog, and you can hang out.
80-degree weather.
Absolutely. So come on down.
Okay. Where are you at, Eric?
We're at 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. That's one of the luckiest of Colorado Boulevard, and that's in the Glendale Shopping Center.
Look forward to seeing you, Eric. Keep
Thanks,
it going.
Guys.
Take care. All right, we're going to stay right with the phones. We have Bob, who has a question about mechanics liens. Bob, how you doing?
Doing good, thanks. I've hired a general contractor to do a residential basement remodel. So I've got various subs down there working, electrician, plumber, framer.
Okay.
And the general contractor is not paying his subs, and a couple of them are threatening to file a lien on my house. Can they do that? And if they, and what defense do I have?
All right. Do you have a contract with the general contractor?
Yes, I do.
Does that contract call for payment to the general contractor?
Yes.
Okay, but what you've gotten notice from the subs that they're not getting paid.
I got one of them called me up and told me that he intends to file a notice of intent.
All right.
And I talked to another one, and he has been paid. He's thinking the same way. Nothing yet, but they're threatening.
All right. You need to get lien waivers from the subs when you go to pay the general contractor. Now, your contract may not call for that, but based on this notice that you've got, the information you've got, you want to tell the general contractor you're not going to pay the general contractor anymore. You're going to do checks to the lien, to the subs, and to the general contractor, or you want to see what the status is of those payments. And you got to start that right now, Bob. You don't want to give another dime to the general contractor until you make sure.
That ship has sailed. I've unfortunately, in good faith, paid the general contractor on schedule, which isn't the amount of money more than enough to pay his subs. So here I am. What can I do?
How was your contract structured? Was it structured for payment to the general contractor with the retainage, as in the general contractor's profit being held to the end of the project?
It's just a third up front, a third after rough inspection, and a third on final.
And where are you in the status of the contract right now?
Well, unfortunately, I was duped into paying the second before the rough inspection. The rough inspection has been completed finally, but I was sort of conned into giving that money 2 weeks before rough inspection, and in that ensuing couple of weeks is when the lien talk started happening.
Okay. Well, what you want to do right now is immediately, as I said, cut off the contractor, and of course you know that. You're not going to give him any more money. Have you had anybody in there, or can you tell by looking at it how much is left to do on the project?
Yeah, I would say that we've passed rough. We still got to do drywall and there's a bathroom in there. I mean,
would it take more than the remaining third to get it done? Is what I'm finding.
A little bit more than the remaining third. Yeah, I say so far by making the second payment. If I look at the contract estimates, I probably paid a little bit more than work has been done. Maybe a couple $4,000 or $5,000 more.
Did it pass inspection on the rough?
It's good work. I got no qualms about the subs. They're all real good, but they're in a bind, and they're letting me know, sorry, Bob, but they got to protect their butts.
Well, what you're talking about is important, because here's the thing. You're going to want to start getting the subs paid. And one of the first things you want to do is and we're going to obviously be talking to you out there, is getting a hold of this contractor and finding out and putting pressure on the contractor to pay the subs. You want to remove the contractor from the project at this point, because the contractor obviously hasn't properly honored the contract to make sure the subs are paid and keep your property free from liens.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm assuming you've been able to verify these subs haven't gotten paid, and you don't just have subs who are upset and are defaming the contractor without a basis.
No, I haven't been able to verify that. I don't know how to do that.
Okay. Have you called up the contractor and just asked him?
Communication with the contractor is a little bit strange. He's good with excuses and fast talking. So, he's said he's sorting everything out. That's about all I can get from him.
He said he's what?
Sorting everything out.
No.
Yeah, I know. Well,
That's a good enough reason for you to know the subs aren't getting paid. Shut down the contractor immediately. Give the contractor notice that based on the fact that he has failed to properly document payment to the subs, and you're now getting threats from the subs that they're going to file mechanics liens, that you're no longer going to be paying the contractor until you get notice and appropriate documentation verifying payment to the subs. If I were you, I don't know if you want to be your own general, or I would get another person in there to look at the property and find out how close they are to having two-thirds of the job done, because you want to have two-thirds of the job done. because that's what you paid the general. I would make demand on the general that he identify and give you a list of all subs who have worked on the job, including laborers. You're not just talking about subs who've come in and done the plumbing and the electrical and that, but you want laborers who have done it, and you want proof of payment to them. You want to be able to make separate calls to each one of them to verify the payments. The subs that have warned you that they're looking at having to file a lien or record a lien on your property, I would look at those people and ask them how much is owing and get a total number that would put you on schedule for the completion of your property. But what you need to do is get another contractor out there who can take a look at that job and can give you an idea of how much more it's going to cost to complete it to make sure that you're not upside down. And that's a lot of work, and it's a lot going on. What just generally, is this a remodel of your basement, or what do we got generally?
Yeah, it's a $35,000 basement finish. It was an unfinished basement, and it's right now I think I'm in a hole about, looking at the contract estimates for the services, I'm in a hole about $4,000.
Okay. And overnight, this can turn into $14,000 if you don't start doing things right now. So, Bob, we can talk to you off the air, but here's what I want to do. I want to, first of all, do you want me to give you help and maybe find a contractor to come out and look at the status of the job?
Sure, yes.
Because you're going to have to find somebody, a contractor, who can come out and give you the status of the job and then tell you how to what it's going to take to complete it. And so what I'd like to do is, you know, I don't know if you know anybody, but I've got one that if he's got time, I can give you the referral and see if he can come out and, first of all, just look and see about giving you the status of the job and say what it's going to take to complete it and how much money you're talking about. And then from your current contractor, as he's, quote, sorting things out, I'd say the first thing he's going to sort out is he's going to give you the names and numbers of everybody who's worked on your property. So you can verify whether they've been paid.
Right. Right. Yeah. The three tradesmen, plumber, electrical, and framing, I'm in communication with.
Well,
and I've got pretty much the information from them about what's owed and what's the status.
Okay.
But the contractor just pretty much blows me off. You know, when he talks to me, he just tells me that he needs time, he's been, you know, working on it and all that. So
the contractor has to be dismissed. I'm sorry, but the contractor has to, everything's got to stop with the contractor. Because I'm also worried about material supplies. If the contractor, let's say the framer, I don't know if the framer provided his own materials or if these materials were purchased from even a place like Home Depot where they were brought. You could be looking at a potential lien there. You could be looking at liens for material suppliers, for laborers, common laborers, and for each one of these trades. And that's why we've got to find out where this contractor got all this stuff and try and clean that project up. And plus, we got to know what's left. And you don't want to waste a lot of time because, you know, a lot of times these contractors, that's showing they're right on the verge of having to close up or have a problem. So we need to get you taken care of pretty quick.
Well, the materials came from Home Depot.
Okay. Do you know if they've been paid?
No. Can I find out?
Yep. If you know the Home Depot was given, you can call up and find out if the materials for you for your job have been paid. Absolutely. Absolutely. Call that Home Depot, say this is the address and here's the materials and find out if it's been paid. Hey, let me get your number off the air and so we can call and talk to you some more about it and see what we can do to get you up to date on your project and know what's going on, all right?
Okay.
Thanks. Okay, Bob. Okay. Thanks for calling the Bell and Paul Legal Show. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be right back to talk to Joe about a RICO case in Las Vegas. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Brad Pollock, Bob Leonard in the studio today talking to you about your legal matters, your legal questions. We're going to go straight to the phones. We do have a line open at 303-713-8255. But right now we're going to talk to Joe. Joe, you got some follow-up on that RICO case going on in Vegas?
Yeah, I was wondering. I know there's similar stuff going on in Denver as far as in this one I've heard to the grapevine. And then I know that the Jefferson County, the whole probate, the judge retired early, and then the clerk and everybody else left the building up there. And the same thing in Arapahoe County, the judge retired early. Now, in Vegas, the attorney general was on the Fox 13 saying that they're gonna that judge was fired. Now, is that? Do you know how they go about once it starts unwinding like that? Are they gonna entangle everybody, or do you think they'll just go after the non-lawyers?
No. I think. Let me tell you something. This is my belief. I think you're going to find that a lot of pressure is going to come down on everything that's going on with respect to the public trustee problems that you've been talking about. It's going to take a long time, and it's going to require people like you, Joe, who stay on top of it and keep asking problems. Okay, but I think
the internet's been a big help too for vetting some of this stuff, but. Once it starts happening, it seems like it, my thing started 6 years ago, but then I had a follow-up with another a Vietnam veteran that they really abused, took advantage of a disadvantaged person. I think if you just get the word out to other people that they try to marginalize you and dismiss you and put a restraining order on you, but if you stay after them... light will come out on these people.
Well, let's make sure we get it right about what happens here, okay? I have a little bit more knowledge about the Arapahoe County case, and I think that involved a judge making some orders to Tamara Palmer and to look into more what was going on, especially with, I think it was a lawyer by the name of Gormley, Jennifer Gormley, if I remember right.
Yeah, they were sued civilly for RICO, and then they kind of tried to make it go away, but the internet allowed you to follow it a little more, and then it was a pretty prominent property that they tried to steal. It was it used to be the Marble Man, and they had, I don't know how many acres, but there probably was oil rights to it and stuff out there out southeast metro
right.
area, but it's interesting how to follow the dots, and then the same thing in Jeffco.
I know in Arapahoe it was Judge, I think, Fazings and Sylvester.
Timothy Fazing.
Yeah, Judges Fazing and Sylvester. And I thought they came down pretty hard, or they started making some demands to get some information from these two of what was going on and trying to unwind exactly what was going on with some problems. And I think it wasn't Munsinger out in Jefferson that was doing that same thing.
Yeah, Munsinger got caught up. He was running kind of a thing out of he was the head of the Scottish Rite Masons, but there was the same judge that was in the Westward story back 20 years ago with the real prominent family that they were, it was called Mommy Dearest, and Pendergrass did a story on it. And then
right.
The ironic thing is that one of the grandsons from the lady that got really ripped off is now they put in charge up in that Arapahoe County, but... It's funny all the dots that connect. I mean,
the circles.
Ron Service in Jefferson County is the most egregious that I've heard that they're coming down on the very hardest to tie into organized crime.
Right. And I was going to say, actually, I think when you say goes all over the place, I think because I don't know a lot about the Jeffco one, but I know that I think Fazing and Sylvester both came out very hard against what was going on and actually caused quite a bit of the investigation that was going on with Palmer and Gormley. And for people listening, a lot of this is, you don't understand some of the awesome power that the probate trustees, yeah, you do, but people out there, the probate trustees have. And that's a lot of awesome power the probate trustees have with regard to and concerning the how an estate is handled. And a lot of times they can hire lawyers to look into or to deal with the probate matters, and next thing you know, the entire estate is being paid over to the lawyer they've hired or and whether or not that
got it down pat, it's like, oh, you're fighting with your family, but then with the internet, you're able to. My father had some property that was by the block away from a light rail station, so. It's a funny thing, then the new public administrator in Jefferson County's last name is Abel, and the people that own my dad's property's name is Abel. So, you know, if that's not self-dealing and breach of fiduciary, breach of duty, you know, but you can't crack the code until you get, you know, somebody like in Vegas where they start, you know, where the dominoes start falling.
Right. But so. I'll tell you this much, and yes, I'm a lawyer, but I believe our judges here in Colorado are very good judges. And I, you know, obviously the whole state, you may have a bad judge here and there, but for the most part, our judges work hard and they do a good job and they stay on top of their cases. And they don't allow this kind of stuff. Now, yes, they have to depend on the honesty and integrity of the people that come before them, being the probate administrators, the probate attorneys, and everybody else. And yes, you can get this problem. I mean, we see a huge problem that happened in the foreclosures that were going on years ago, and we have lawyers being prosecuted for that. And, you know, it catches up to them. And
don't you think that's what's going to happen with the coming in the next 2 years in Colorado? And is your feeling that that's going to go down in Colorado because of some of the stuff they've pulled off in this?
Yeah, because I think our attorneys generals and I think our DAs and our district attorneys and I think our judges are going to be vigilant in making sure this stuff is uncovered. What the bad part is it gets uncovered, but we have victims such as you, Joe, who have lived through the crisis and lived through the problems and lived through the dishonesty that was visited upon them. And that's a bad part, you know, because all of a sudden...
All constitutional rights taken away because of the cover.
Right,
up, you know?
And
so
heirs
changes the dynamics there. I mean, it's like
right, and heirs find their entire estates depleted. One of the things that heirs should be doing, you know, because this isn't a political show, but one of the things the heirs should be doing in a probate case is just like you, Joe, staying consistent and very vigilant in finding out what's happening to the money. Why is the money being paid this way? Why did the trustee or the lawyer spend this money? What's going on? And bringing it up before the judge. And Joe, we got to go now. I'm happy to talk to you off the air about this or talk to you more about it as far as what's going on. But we got to go now, all right?
Thanks, bye.
Okay, thank you for listening to the Bell and Paul Klegel Show. We appreciate all you listeners. The Larry and Barry Real Estate Show is coming up, folks. It's a great show. You want to stay and listen to that. You're going to enjoy what you hear from these guys. They are knowledgeable. They are experts, and they can help you in these times of real estate. So stick around. In the meantime, next week, we'll be right back. If you have questions, make sure you have them for us, and we'll be happy to answer them. We'll see you next week. Talking by the campfire, it's the simple things in life.